fasten your seatbelts, get the tissues ready, and polish up those dancing shoes. We're going down musical memory lane with me, Monique Chambers, and a bunch of guests that have got really eclectic taste. Welcome to this week's Musical Memories with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Benjamin Milton. Now, you're an actor, writer, you know, jack of all trades, and you've had a really, really interesting life living in London and most recently in Malta.
Bless you.
There you go. Yeah,
yeah, it has been quite interesting, that is a word. Yeah, yeah, I think a lot of people, you don't think it is until you speak to people and they say, well, what do you do or what have you done?
Mm.
And then when you explain, they say, wow, that's quite varied.
Yes.
And you kind of go, yeah, I suppose it is.
And you can see that actually by your music choices. So some of them, we're a similar age, so a lot of your pop culture references are similar to mine. But you are way, way cooler than I ever was, for sure. Like, I'm looking at some of this stuff and like, yeah, okay, yeah, mm-hmm.
Well, it's really interesting because I grew up with two older sisters and an older brother, kind of 10, 11 and 13 years older than me, so
quite
a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And I would remember Saturday nights, them playing music, drinking wine, smoking cigarettes in their bedroom, getting ready to go out.
Yeah.
So I grew up with really cool music. And there were a few things that, this makes me sound really arrogant, but I looked and I put down and I thought, no one's going to know who that is, there'll be no reference to it, it's quite obscure, it's not particularly interesting. But it just meant something to me.
To you,
but unfortunately, I had to kind of cut those out because I just thought, well, they're not going
to,
no one's going to even know
who
they are.
Have to dig out those tracks.
Yeah, so I felt even cooler as a 10-year-old. Just because I had older brothers and sisters that were into the music scene.
Yeah. You know? So they lived it and you kind of
reached it. Yeah, my sister's first partner was George Michael's saxophonist.
Okay.
So, you know, at 10 years old, I'd be getting phone calls from China.
Hmm.
And I'd be like, who's this? And he'd be like, it's David, quickly get Julia. And I'd be like, David's in China with George Michael, quick, answer the phone. You know, I was really excited as a 10-year-old.
No, that's pretty
cool. To be already immersed in that world.
So you've got George Michael actually comes up as your first track.
Yeah. I've always been a huge fan, obviously, from the age, you know, growing up in the 80s, I thought Wham were the coolest thing in the
world.
And
the most gorgeous.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, around the time of Faith, that look, I bought a leather biker's jacket and tight 501s, and I looked ridiculous, but just assumed I looked exactly like George Michael. But the song I chose is really a reference to the British press.
Mm-hmm.
I think the British press are horrendous in the way that they build people up, and then when they're successful, they tear them down.
Mm.
And George Michael, I think, is a real case in point that when he died, they were all saying, my God, this guy gave so much money to charity, he did so much, he was amazing.
Yeah.
Up until that point, every week there was a story of him coming out of a toilet with drugs in his pocket or falling asleep in a lay-by on a road or whatever. And what I loved was that he didn't let any of that get to him. And he got arrested in a toilet in LA for soliciting with a policeman. And rather than go and hide, which is what I think a lot of celebrities would have done, he wrote a song called Outside, which is about the pleasures of carnal knowledge outside of your own home, and filmed a video of him dancing in a toilet dressed as a policeman.
I know, that was brilliant, actually.
I mean, the video was, and I just thought, what better way than to kill something with humour?
Mm.
It's like, I genuinely don't care what you think of me.
Yeah.
And for that, I just admired him so much. So although there were lots of George Michael songs I could have chosen, and Wham, actually, some really early Wham songs I love, for me, that epitomizes the whole kind of two fingers up to the British media, you don't control me, I do what I want, I don't care.
And they haven't learned, unfortunately, have they?
No, because as you'll see later on, there's another artist I've chosen for exactly the same reasons.
Yeah. Really sad, but we're going to listen to Outside because it really is a fabulous track.
I think I'm done with the hall. time. Take me to the places that I love best. And yes, I've been back. Doctor, won't you do a little check? You see, I think about it all the time. 24/7.
Beatles played heavily on my previous guest's list. In fact, he did a couple of cover versions of his own, which were quite fun. But Drive My Car.
Yeah.
What does this...
When I was about 15 or 16, I had a friend who is now one of my closest friends. He's a bass player and he lives in Dubai. And we formed a band together. And we were the only two Beatles fans in the band. Everyone else thought the Beatles weren't cool at that point. But we just adored them. And this is such a bizarre story. Johnny and I worked together as a part-time job. We were in a band, but our part-time job was working in a Waitrose supermarket in Cambridge.
Hmm.
And there was a room you were called to if you were naughty.
Oh.
So if you had put the tins in the wrong place, if you'd done something naughty, you'd get called to the room called the Sabie room, which was a big machine that crushed everything, and it literally crushed your spirit. If you got a voiceover that said, you know, can Benjamin Milton please go to the Sabie room, your heart would just drop. And Johnny and I both loved Rubber Soul, which isn't a particularly well-known Beatles album, and we both love the song Baby, You Can Drive My Car.
Mm.
And we just had this thing that in Waitrose, every time we walked past each other on the shop floor, we go, Baby, who can drive my car? And we'd just sing it to each other. And there was one day Johnny had gone to the pub in his break and had a bit few too many to drink. And he came back and he said, oh, I think I'm going to get into trouble. And after half an hour, I phoned up the receptionist and I said, could you put a call out, please, for Johnny Liddell to go to the Sabie room? So 10 minutes later, it was, could Mr. Jonathan Liddell please go to the Sabie room? And he said he walked all the way there with his heart in his mouth thinking, I'm so going to get sacked. And he opened the door and I just stood there and I went, baby, you can drive my car. And we both just screamed absolutely like two stupid hysterical 15-year-olds screaming.
Why did you pick out that song? What was it?
It was just something. We both love Paul McCartney. We're both bass players. It's got a great bass line. It's got a great beat. And there was just something about that song. It's such an upbeat song. And Rubber Soul was where they started to change from mop top, happy clappy, you know, pop stars to slightly experimenting Norwegian Wood acoustic stuff on there. The album is a great album. It's a really unknown album.
Okay.
And it was just purely that. Whenever I hear that song, literally to this day, I can picture our brown button uniforms that, you know, were really highly flammable, standing in this room with him thinking he's about to be fired and me just crying my eyes out.
I was like, so Waitrose is one of the first places I visit whenever I go to UK. I really miss not having a proper Waitrose in Malta. So when I go around now, I'm going to be singing.
Yeah, you're going to be singing, baby. If you hear it over the radio as you're walking around, you're some sort of divine spirit.
But sort of ironic that your friend's surname is Lidl.
Yeah. I shall tell him that. I'm speaking to him later. I shall tell him.
There you go. Let's have a listen to the song while we giggle away.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
Ask the girl what she wanted to be. You see, I wanna be famous, a star of the screen, but you can do something in between. Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Understood. Working for peanuts is all very fine, but I can show you a better time. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car, and maybe I love you. Beep, 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 yeah.
Style Council. Oh, loved.
Weller, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing the guy's done that I haven't loved from The Jam.
Except he didn't marry me. He married four other women, but he didn't marry me.
He didn't marry me. I was going to say, he married quite a few other women, didn't he? They don't mean to make you feel bad. That was quite a choice.
I never met him, so I kind of forgive him.
I don't want to meet him. No. He's one of those people that I have friends in the music industry who have met their idols, and they've just said, don't do it. Don't do it. A friend of mine met Prince once. And he just said it was awful, absolutely awful. Just neither of them spoke. They didn't know what to say to each other. We walked off. So I don't ever want to meet Paul Weller. But I loved The Jam growing up.
Yep.
And then the Style Council for me was more kind of poppy and jazzy. And I play the trumpet.
Okay.
I've been playing the trumpet since I was about 7. And this particular song has an incredible brass section. To use the brass line as the melody before the song even kicks in is just fantastic. And it's like a wall of sound. But the reason I chose it is, at the time, I was about 13, and I wasn't going through a particularly good time at school, and I was quite unhappy. And I find it great when a songwriter can juxtapose a melody and a lyric with what's going on. So Have You Ever Had It Blue is about someone that's lost everything. He's lost his girlfriend, he's lost his hope, he's lost this. The melody's incredible. The melody is just someone that's on top of the world.
Mm.
So I love the idea of you don't have to have a morose melody
True.
To go with a morose lyric or a lyric about... It's almost like Weller saying, there's hope, always hope. There's Yeah. always hope. And if it might not be in the words, it'll be in the music. Have faith in the music.
So is that something you put on now if you go, you know, having a bit of a
To this day, I'm writing something at the moment with a friend of mine, as you know, in Helsinki, writing a six-part TV series. And one of the opening monologues is... Shout to the Top.
Oh, I love yeah. that song. You know, that's my real angry
again,
song.
Again,
yeah.
that song is about we're being kicked down, yeah. nothing's happening. But the song is so upbeat.
Yeah.
And also, one last thing. I just love the fact that when you mix something kind of governmental with something cool, so the Style Council. Imagine yeah. if there was a Style Council.
We could work there.
I mean, I do it myself. As I walk around. But someone that came up to you and went, I'm really sorry, but that dress doesn't go with that. You know, I'm sorry, but you just have to get changed. And like when the Ministry of Sound opened, I remember thinking, I was about 17, and I remember thinking, a Ministry of Sound. Could you imagine? If someone went round to nightclubs and went, I'm sorry, but the sound here's
Maybe.
Terrible.
Maybe we could do a whole new Sim City with yeah. these Ministry of Sound,
cultures.
The style
yeah, 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 yeah. So I've always liked that play on words as well, of like something cool with council, but, you know, style.
But he is the best dressed man in the world, actually. Idris Elba, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, to this day. Mm. And his albums just get better and better.
As we age,
He released an album on my birthday, actually, on July the 5th, a few days ago.
Okay.
And it's just, he released one 2 years before that.
He releases an album for your birthday and still
Yeah, he still won't marry you. I'll ask him. If I do ever meet him, which I hope I don't, I'll ask him if he'll marry you. But this album, he obviously, I really love the fact that he's quite a working class geezer.
Mm.
But he has no problem putting his heart on his sleeve and saying, this is how I feel, and this is how it feels to be vulnerable. And I don't think British men do that. I think they have a lot of bravado.
Yes.
And a sort of macho image. And Weller is a very macho man, but still says, look, man, I've lost my wife. I've split up with my girlfriend. I feel... You know, I love the idea of someone quite masculine.
And giving men something to, you know, girls have loads and loads of songs
exactly.
to sop to,
yeah.
so it's actually
yeah.
good
yeah.
to have a yeah. masculine point of view in that
yeah.
sense.
Yeah, no, so that's particularly why I picked that song, because that time in my life, it gave me so much hope.
Yeah.
And it's just so funky.
Let's get it on.
Shackles round the sun, and the whole wants to change his cause, your feet face to the floor. When all the people you thought you knew are changing more and more. Even the girl you thought would see seems only to ignore. The only love of fighting for.
One, Between the Bars by Elliot Smith.
Yeah.
You don't know this one.
Yeah, sorry, this is a bit of a curveball.
Tell us about it.
I went to see the film Good Will Hunting, I don't know if you remember it, with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and Robin Williams, about a young boy in therapy who was like a sort of child prodigy maths-wise, but couldn't get, came from a really poor part of town and wasn't going to get through. And Robin Williams became his therapist. And Elliot Smith is a guitarist-songwriter who wrote the soundtrack. And it was the first time ever in my life, as someone that's been obsessed with film from the age of about 8, that I realised the soundtrack was like a third or fourth character.
Okay.
If anyone else had written the music for that film, it would not be that film. Okay. It had to be Elliot Smith. And his use of melody is just incredible. Mm. I mean, it's a tragic, tragic story. He was a heroin addict, alcoholic. And in 2004, I think it was, he was found, he stabbed himself to death in his own bedroom, which obviously is just, you know, tragic. The guy wasn't getting help from anyone. But this particular song reminds me of when I was in Soho and I would be on a melancholic one when I would be drunk and phoning my friends at 3 a.m. and saying, come and have a drink. Where are you? Where are you?
Want a kebab?
I want to have a drink. And they'd be like, no, we're asleep. Go to bed. Shut up. Mm. And I would feel really melancholic. And Between the Bars, for me, the lyrics, I mean, A, his melody, his finger picking, his guitar style. He's got the most gentle, soft, vulnerable voice. But the lyrics are just about how alcohol will hold you in between the bars. And will take you away and will comfort you and will push away the things that you don't want, and explains literally why alcohol is a blanket for so many people. And quite a few people have done very good cover versions of it. It's quite a well-known song. So as I say, it's a bit of a curveball. It's not particularly what you call upbeat or well-known or anything, but whenever I hear it now, it takes me back completely to a very specific time in my life. Yeah, definitely.
So let's listen to this. It's a very, very short song. So Between the Bars by Elliot Smith.
Drink up, baby. Stay up all night. With the things you could do, you won't, but you might. The potential you'll be, that you'll never see. The promises you'll only make. Drink up with me now and forget all about the pressure of days. Do what I say and I'll make you okay. And drive them away, the images stuck in your head. Drink up, baby, forget the stars.
Clouds and Paul Weller in one sentence, you know?
Again, above the clouds. I was in an acid jazz band with my friend Johnny. Mm-hmm. We managed to leave Waitrose.
This is Johnny Little,
Johnny
Waitrose,
Little,
right, okay,
Little
yeah.
from Dubai.
Yeah.
We managed to leave Waitrose and get a management deal, and we were in a band, and we thought we were going to be the next Jamiroquai. We thought we were amazing. We were doing gigs, we were recording, we were doing mm-hmm. really well. And Paul Weller was signed to Polydor and had been for the entire Style Council years, produced a house album because house music was kicking in 1988,
okay.
gave it to Polydor and they went, no, we're not releasing that, and they dropped him from the record label.
Okay.
So he'd had a label, he'd been signed to a label since he was about 16, so suddenly he was 31 with no one to give him any money and no one to release his music. Mm. And this album is a really unknown album. It's his first album, and it's called The Paul Weller Movement. It's the first one he released leaving the Style Council
yeah.
and before Wildwood and all the other ones that were quite well known. And again, exactly the same reason as Ever Had It Blue. The lyrics mm-hmm. are about, I have no idea where I'm going with my life. I have no idea what's happening. Above the clouds, what's to be found? Will I still be around? Who knows? The lyrics, if you read them, are tragic. The melody's incredible.
So he really is a talented
beautiful.
Chap, really.
So again, to hear that juxtaposition of a young man, 30, not knowing where he's going, not knowing where he's doing, and instead of writing the most morose song ever, has just come up with this incredible melody.
Because that was the thing, in those times, there were lots of those bands like the Smiths. And they were all
I did love, I like the Smiths. My musical spectrum is really broad, and I really like Joy Division and the Smiths.
I didn't like
but
any of that.
That was I would put that on, funnily enough, when I wanted to feel depressed. You know, when you like just think, I want to stay in and eat a whole tub of ice cream this evening. I don't want to go out.
Is that depression?
No. Oh. I just don't want to go out.
That's like, it's 6 o'clock, you know.
Yeah. But the Smiths were that for me. It was there was always a reason for putting the Smiths on.
Yeah.
But every time I hear Above the Clouds, I'm just like, again, it's hope. And I think music does give people hope. I think music is about connection.
That's it. You can just put it on, turn it up, dance around your kitchen, and just no one else knows. Yeah.
I sing my heart out to this in the kitchen, and I have a dog, as you know, called Arthur. Mm. And I pick him up, and his two front paws, and we dance. He loves Paul Weller, and we dance around the kitchen to Paul Weller. So anyone watching or listening that knows Arthur, if you can imagine him dancing around my kitchen to Paul Weller, please do, because he loves this
song. That's a whole new thing. We need to get a little clip of that for the old Facebook page.
Oh, you really don't. Above the clouds, was to be found.
shout and my own self down. So sadness creeps into my dreams when you're scared of living but afraid to die. I get scared of giving and I must find the faith to beat it up.
Drake's Northern Sky is the next one on your list.
Yeah. Nick Drake was a singer-songwriter around the late 60s, early 70s, who released three albums. He was signed to Island Records.
Okay.
And he had the most incredible finger-picking style that was so unique that
that's,
other people...
That's guitar-y,
yeah, guitar-y,
I'm guessing,
acoustic guitar, using such accurate and definite and hard-attacking finger-picking, but with the most gentle voice.
Okay.
But he was a manic depressive and couldn't play live. And at the time, record companies wanted you to play live so that people could hear the music, and then it would get sold in record shops. And he did, I think, three gigs in his whole life, each one with his back turned to the audience.
Oh.
And he just got worse and worse and worse. And after three albums, unfortunately, in 1974, he overdosed on barbiturates. And I really wanted to play a Nick Drake song because I had never, ever heard of him. And I was at a New Year's Eve party once in Cambridge. I was about 17 and everyone had gone to bed. And it was just one of these mad, mad, huge mansions. And these two front doors were left open and my friend had all sorts of animals and stuff. And I went through her father's record collection and picked out Nick Drake and put it on and just had this immediate connection, like I knew what was coming next. It was like I knew the album.
Okay.
It was like I'd heard it before or it was in. It was so bizarre. And then these two horses just came in and stood in the room looking at me for the whole album. And I just sat there looking at these two horses while I played this album. And it finished and they walked off. And it was the most surreal experience. And then a few years later, I went to London and I was training to be an actor. And I had insomnia. And one of the acting tutors said, my husband's a hypnotherapist in Harley Street who charges £4 million an hour. But he's writing a book on actors, and he's really interested in insomnia, the thought processes behind it.
Okay.
He has said he will see you for free if you give him your thoughts each week, if you write down a journal.
Right.
So we did. And then one week I gave him, he said, I need to know about moments in your life that were sort of transcendental or a bit odd or a bit, and I wrote that down. And he basically just welled up in tears and he said, Nick Drake was one of my closest friends. And he said he would come to my house and sit in the corner of the room with a cup of tea for 3 hours and just not talk to anyone and then just go home. He said, and we all tried to get to speak to him, to get help, to get, he said, and none of us could. And it was just this moment where we both looked at each other. It was like, What are the chances of that? Yeah. Like, I was in Cambridge, you were in, he was in Scotland somewhere in the 70s, and it was just, how did that happen? So I've always felt a kind of an affinity with Nick Drake. And most of his songs are really, really depressing.
Then maybe I won't look him up.
So, Northern Sky has been used in quite a few sort of rom-coms because it's kind of sweet and gentle and tinkly and light.
Until he starts to...
Yeah, no, even him singing is kind of is light. It's a light song. Out of his three albums, it's the lightest, tinkliest, most radio-friendly song ever. So I wanted to choose a song that really meant something to me. So maybe this song doesn't mean as much as other Nick Drake songs do to me, but I really had to have Nick Drake in here.
Just... So let's have a listen. Northern Sky.
I never saw moons, knew the meaning of the sea. I never held emotion in the palm of my hand. I felt sweet breezes in the top of a tree. But now you're here, bright in my northern sky. Been a long time that I'm waiting. Been a long time that I'm alone. Been a long time that I've wandered through the people I have known. Oh, if you would and you could straighten my new mind's eye.
Okay, now you're challenging me with this one. You and I, I'm not even going to try and attempt the name of this band.
Krongbin.
Right.
They're a trio from Texas. It's a guitarist, a bass player, and a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And to differentiate themselves from when they're off stage, the guitarist, who's a man, and the bass player, who's a woman, she's an amazing bass player, Laura Lee, they both wear jet black straight wigs with fringes cut.
Okay.
So that the minute they go off stage, no one knows
who's who.
They can literally walk to the bar and no one has any idea who they are, apart from the poor drummer who doesn't. So everyone knows who he is. And I first heard them about 3 years ago, and their music just carries so many influences from Thai, from Middle Eastern. It's just a real hodgepodge of Middle Eastern and African and all of that, but with dub and soul and funk.
Whoa.
And it just sounds like it shouldn't work. But it really does. And I believe in the healing power of music. And when I put their first two albums on, I put them on repeat for about a month, and it got me through. I was having a particularly difficult period writing mm-hmm. something, and I listened to these two albums on repeat for a month, and then it was almost like they'd just unblocked some sort of channel. I just then couldn't stop writing. It was really interesting. And they make, please, if anyone wants to look them up, please look them up, because they make the best videos in the world, and they are the cheapest video. They show that you don't need money to do something good.
Ah.
Their videos must literally cost about $1,000.
So, say the name of the band again?
Krungbin.
Krungbin.
Yeah.
You and I is the name of the song.
You and I is the
We're
going
to have a
song.
Listen to a portion of it, because it's quite a long track. But Krungbin.
Yeah. And it's the funkiest song of their last album. They've just released an album about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And this is my favourite. And because I'm a bass player, I'm trying to learn her bass lines.
Ah.
And Laura Lee is one of these bass players that makes every bass line sound simple as possible. And then you start to play it and go, oh, she's good. Oh, she's good. And you just can't do it. So I love her for that.
Together, that's right. If we have one time, we can live.
A surprise, but not
yes.
Lacrimosa, Mozart's Requiem. What memory does that give you?
A very current one. Over the last few years, I have neighbours that play very loud music, and it's usually German techno, and it's usually quite late in the morning. And it doesn't particularly bother me. Music doesn't bother me that much, but it bothers my partner very much. So in retaliation, on a Sunday morning, I get my stereo, which is wireless, and put it in my courtyard and play Mozart's Requiem as loud as possible every single Sunday morning. A Requiem being death, and so in my mind, it's almost the death of the week, so that we know that Monday, this fresh week is coming, so you're sort of saying goodbye to the week.
That's quite a nice way to do things.
Yeah, and it's a ritual now, and I'm quite OCD, so it has become quite ritualistic. But Lacrimosa, for me, is just the most beautiful movement in it. If ever I could join a choir. I mean, it's a bucket list thing for me, is to sing Mozart's Requiem as part of a male choir. But another thing is, have you ever read Brideshead Revisited?
No, I haven't actually.
Right. Lord Marchmont is a Catholic who's lapsed and has an affair and does all these terrible things. And then just before he dies, he confesses and then has this incredible Catholic funeral. And I think it's really funny. I'm a Buddhist and I've never been baptized, but I remember saying to a friend of mine once, wouldn't it be great if, like, just before I died, I got baptized, confirmed, confessed, and then had an amazing funeral at Brompton Oratory with swathes of red damask and, like, this huge choir singing Mozart's Requiem, because it's the absolute opposite of what a Buddhist would do. And I just think it'd be really funny to sort of astonish my friends who'd expect the most simple ceremony. And they'd be like, sorry, what's going on here?
Well, I'm going to play it for you now because I don't want to be thinking about...
Yeah, about my death.
Yeah, thank you.
It is one of the most, I think, one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever, ever written, personally.
Lacrimosa, Mozart's Requiem.
Thank you.
Amy Winehouse, Love is a Losing Game. That just, you know, hairs on arms, standy uppy.
Very luckily, as I said, I had friends in the music industry, so I knew about this girl when she was doing showcases when no one had ever heard of her, and she was dragging her little acoustic guitar around clubs in Camden trying to get known. And the first time I heard her, I was like, this is one of England's greatest ever songwriters and singers. This woman's phenomenal. And her first album came out and it did okay, and then the second one came out, Back to Black, and just blew up.
Yeah.
And I relate back to George Michael. I've seen video footage of her trying to buy a pint of milk in a shop, and if you could see the 1,000 photographers flashing, shouting, screaming at her to try and get a photograph. Now, if that happened to me every time I went to my local, like, Town Misra to get a bottle of milk, I think I would be smoking crack and injecting heroin on a daily basis. And I don't think she had support around her, and I think the press just absolutely hounded her. And the first time I heard this song, I just broke down in tears. I was like, this is, for such a young person, to have such a deep understanding of how painful love can be. And then what really confirmed it for me is, well-known people don't do cover versions. Prince doesn't do cover versions. George Michael doesn't do cover. These people don't do cover versions, okay? And I have seen both Prince and George Michael do cover versions of this song.
Yeah.
So when that happens, you go, oh, okay, right, No, it's not just the talent. She is also, you know,
iconic,
a great
songwriter.
Yeah. And George Michael, when he sang it live at Le Garnier in Paris, I mean, he was literally welling up with tears. He just said, it's too sad that we've lost one of the world's greatest songwriters so young. And a lot of the people that died way before I was growing up, so like Jimi Hendrix and all of that, you know, those guys, they all died way before I was around. She died while I was alive. So I feel like I've lost someone of my generation.
But yeah, exactly.
So that's why it hurt more, I think.
So we might play that as we winding down the show. But we've got one last song. We've got a Nick Cave song here. And this is Into My Arms.
Yeah. Nick Cave isn't religious at all. His wife is. Mm-hmm. He was in a Pentecostal church one day, and he went outside for a cigarette, as you do. And he thought, I wonder what it would be like if you did have a faith. And he wrote a song for his wife saying that if angels existed, if a God existed, all I would ever want him to do is to guide him into my arms, you into my arms. And I have a partner who's really, really busy, runs lots of businesses and does a lot. And I'm often annoying him by going up to him in the middle of work and saying, look at these kittens falling over on YouTube. Isn't it funny? He's like, I'm trying to work, for God's sake. And one day I just went up to him, stopped what he was doing, played this song and put my arms around him and held him into my arms. And it was just one of the most romantic moments of my life. Absolutely one of the most romantic moments of my life. It was like, this is the man for me. And this, nothing ever, because every single line of this song just expresses how I feel about my partner.
We'll play you out with that one, because I'm about to cry, actually. So, thank you very much, Benjamin Milton, for joining me.
Thank you very much for asking me. It's been great to go back through my musical memories. Thank you.
Stand. don't believe in an interventionist God. But I know, darling, that you do. If I did, I would kneel down and ask him. Not to intervene when it came to you. Well, not to touch a hair in your head, leave you as you are. If he felt he had to direct you, and direct you into my arms.
We hope you've enjoyed visiting Musical Memories with me, Monique Chambers, and this week's guest. Tune in next week for more.